Speaking of meme coins, we're going to talk about Bitcoin and this halving. Bitcoin is not the meme coin, but what happened on the halving, basically Bitcoin's meme coin event. So the halving, of course, happened last week, and we've seen halvings before. It's pretty much a non-event, except for the fact that it just happened. This one's different, though.
Bankless Nation, it is the last week of April. It is time for your Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. David, we got so much to talk about. Where are we starting?
The Bitcoin halving 1 week later. How are the runes doing? Well, they're probably doing better than CZ, who might be sentenced to jail. For how long? What was the reaction to all of that? What else we got, Ryan?
David, why are you smiling at CZ going to jail, man? That's like serious.
It was
like
the transition between runes and CZ that was funny.
Is it one of those awkward smiles that, you know... You hear tragic news and you smile. It's just one of those things.
It's just how you react to it. Yeah.
We'll talk about that. And we'll talk about how the crypto community is reacting. I think it's a little bit different than SBF. Also, this is very sad. Two more crypto privacy developers were arrested in the US. What is going on? We got to talk about that. And the IRS also wants everybody to register their unhosted crypto wallets. So your MetaMask, your Ledger, David, all that's got to be on a tax form. We'll talk about that too.
And then an LRT announced their token release, which then triggered liquidations. How did that happen? And then Telegram also expanding into the world of payments using Tether. 900 million users in Telegram now, all like proximate to a wallet and to stablecoins. I'm sure that that's just the start. Is this the beginning of a new super app? Before we get into all of those details and everything else that happened this week, a moment to talk about our friends and sponsors over at Safe. Safe, of course, you know Safe. It's a multi-sig. That's where bankless.eth is. It's a multi-sig. It's where I have my own multi-sig. A lot of people have their own multi-sigs, and they frequently use Safe because it's the largest account abstraction leader with $100 billion in TVL that just announced their Safe Activity Rewards program. So you get rewarded for using your Safe, making transactions through Safe, holding assets in Safe, doing things with your Safe. So there is a link in the show notes to getting started with your Safe Pass that they want you to get so you can get your rewards from the Safe ecosystem.
You know, it's not only they want you to get it. I want you to get it. We want you to get it because it is a key to amplifying the points that you receive in your Safe. Mm-hmm. So we just claimed ours yesterday. I don't know if you know this, David, in one of our multi-sigs. Because if you have Safe tokens...
I did it.
Did you not know that?
Oh, you did it. You didn't do that. I did it.
I was told it was done. I didn't know you did it. Because I guess it takes two people to do, huh?
Yeah. It was multi-sig, yeah. It was me and somebody else who's not you.
Okay. Well, thanks for doing it. See, that's an opportunity for me to thank you. And now that we have the Safe Pass, we get extra points when we use Safe. So if you do more transactions, if you have more assets in there, if you like do more stuff in your Safe, you get more points. Now, I don't know what these points are going to be redeemed for entirely, but I'm sure they will be redeemed for some sort of incentive in the Safe ecosystem in the weeks to come. So if you got a Safe, that's just a PSA. Go get your Safe Pass.
Yeah. Speaking of Safe, okay, so like Safe, I mentioned my multi-sig via Gnosis Safe like in 2019. I think we did ours in Bankless in like 2020. Gnosis Safe it's like one of the earliest products that's been in crypto. It's like the first, like when you spawn a smart contract ecosystem, like what's the first thing that you build? Oh, you build a multi-sig.
Yeah.
You build a vault. And so like as this is how like Safe has secured like so many billions of dollars over the years. They airdropped their token last cycle, but it was non-transferable. So you could claim it.
It's like locked in your wallet.
It was locked and it's been locked. It's been locked for a very, very long time. It actually just unlocked this last week, like a couple days ago. So you actually now know what the token value of the Safe product is.
I almost forgot we had Safe tokens, right? Because we couldn't do anything with them.
Which you would claim inside of your Safe, which is how you got the Safe tokens.
All right.
$1.9 billion.
$1.9 billion?
Yeah, for the market cap of Safe.
Oh, it's pretty impressive. Yeah. And that just happened this week too, right? Governance unlocked it. So Safe tokens are now transferable. So that's another PSA for you. Mm-hmm. David, let's get to the markets on the week. Thanks to Kraken for these glorious charts. Flat, but glorious nonetheless.
It's flat.
What are we looking at in the week?
Better than down, yeah.
Flat
is not down, which is good news in the last 4 weeks or so. Bitcoin started the week at 62,800, up 1.5% to 64,000. 400, actually 700, just kidding. And then ETH price also up, but still kind of flat. Start of the week at 3,060, up about 3% to $3,160.
David, do you have any snipe orders in for like any prices? What'd you call it last week?
Stink
term
bids.
For this?
Stink bids.
Stink bids. You got any stink bids
No, because like
Bitcoin
ETH? If I have dollars, I don't hold on to them. I don't, because like stink bids require you to be patient.
Oh.
And I just bid.
You're spur of the moment type of person.
Yeah. Oh, I have dollars. Oh, now I have ETH.
Looks cheap.
I'm buying. Yeah, it looks cheap. That's not 10K ETH. I'll buy.
Hey, look, anything under 10K ETH is super cheap right now. How about the ETH Bitcoin ratio?
It's not great, Ryan. 0.048. Yeah, I got all the way down to 0.0478. It's the lowest it's been in a long ass time.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss, David, but Bitcoin's having its moment in the sun, and hopefully ETH gets that this cycle. We'll have to see, though. It hasn't happened
yet. As we get a goddamn ETH ETF, let me tell you.
How about the global crypto market cap today?
$2.5 trillion.
Layer 2 updates this week brought to you by Mantle, as they always are, which is I got to stop saying new and upcoming Layer 2, because they have really cemented themselves as one of
ecosystem's
the top Layer 2s.
Pretty mature, yeah.
Yeah, super impressive. $1.25 billion in total locked value. Okay, there's lots we could talk about on Layer 2s this week. I want to highlight maybe three things. All right, so one is costs. Layer 2 Beat, by the way, just put together a new kind of like chart, new set of dashboards called costs. And I want you to see this, David. I don't know if you looked at this. So if I go to the 7-day cost of Layer 2s. Actually, no. I'll go to the 1-day cost of Layer 2s, okay? So 1-day costs of Layer 2s, what they're paying in a post-Blobspaces cheap world. Blobspaces is available and Blobspaces is cheap. Look at this. Arbitrum 1, they are spending $3,000 a day.
$3,300 a day.
This is their cost, the cost that they pay to settle all of their transactions, everything.
1.7 million transactions.
That's
$3,300.
Crazy cheap.
Okay, this is a total cost for all of the transactions. Since Arbitrum has 1.7 million transactions on a daily basis, let's filter it, click that little button, and let's filter it by per transaction. So total cost per transaction of the 1.8 million transaction, 0.0074 cents to settle to Ethereum.
Or like per user transaction.
Per transaction.
It's pretty impressive. And I think the TLDR of this is, like, as we said before, when this gets cheap, when like layer two fees to Ethereum gets cheap, you know, everyone talking about Ethereum is so expensive. Well, from a chain perspective, it's really not. Right. From a user perspective on those chains, it's really not. But like cheap fees are just going to spawn more layer twos. Like, we're going to get more and more layer twos. Already 50.
When it's more profitable to build a layer two, you will get more layer twos.
Yep. Another thing I wanted to show you in the layer two ecosystem, David, is the number of active wallets. So look at this chart. This is active wallets per week in the Ethereum ecosystem. You span, it's not all of the chains in the Ethereum ecosystem, but some of the major ones. We are now at 10 million active on-chain wallets in Ethereum.
Pretty
right?
cool. Yeah, that's a doubling in a year.
Yeah. I guess what, like 10 million, it's kind of the size of New York City, right? Like it's a sprawling metropolis of users or something like that. 8 million, 10 million.
Oh yeah.
In that zone. Other thing that's cool this week is Base just became the number two chain after Ethereum in terms of number of USDC, amount of USDC supply inside of it. Not surprising, consider Coinbase has started to settle on the Base chain itself. Do you have any takes on this?
Well, yeah. So Coinbase owns, I think, 25% of Circle. There's totally a competition with Visa angle going on here. They're using Base Chain to like store their own USDC and user account USDC. So they're just using Base, their own chain, as their own settlement network for the Coinbase exchange. I expect this. I honestly could see like USDC on Base surpassing Ethereum layer 1.
Oh, for sure. I think it's up only. I think
It could become the number one USDC chain.
I think
you might as well call Base USDC chain.
They're trying to make it a payment chain, I think, over time. Oh, like maybe a competitor to Visa or something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
David, let's talk about the movers. It wasn't stablecoins, of course, in the week. It wasn't Bitcoin. It wasn't Ether.
It wasn't stablecoins, that's for sure.
It was your favorite, my favorite, meme coins.
Meme coins
were up on the week. All right.
Hooray.
Between 50 to almost 100%. Bonk was up 97% on the week. Pepe was up 54%. Floki, I don't even know what Floki is, 40% on the week. Dog with Hat, it's got a 20%, 28% on the week.
That's our favorite. That's what we love.
Yeah.
I'm bankless.
I know you're bullish meme coins.
Speaking of meme coins, we're going to talk about Bitcoin and its halving. Bitcoin's not the meme coin, but what happened on the halving basically Bitcoin's meme coin event. So the halving happened last week, and we've seen halvings before. It's pretty much a non-event, except for the fact that it just happened. This one's different, though, because now the chart that you are seeing on the screen, you are seeing the fees paid to Bitcoin miners. The very flat blue bars are the block subsidy. That was the 6.25 BTC that was minted per block paid to miners, which is now 3.125. And then the orange is the block fees. Since the halving, you have seen, call it like a pre-halving, it was like a 5-to-1 ratio of block subsidies to block fees.
That's how it's been like almost for a very long time. For most of Bitcoin's history, like there hasn't been much.
Well, no, actually, the fact that those fees are actually in existence, those are all ordinals fees. For most of Bitcoin's history, there was no orange bar.
It's even slimmer.
It's like, yeah, it's even smaller. Yeah. So like a 6-to-1 ratio of fees to block subsidies being the 6. Now, post-halving, it's pretty volatile, but with runes, the introduction of runes, block fees are just totally surpassing all historical total incentives. So like for the podcast listeners, we're seeing bar charts that are like 5 times higher than the pre-halving security budget. And that's all coming from rune fees, transaction competition to become a transaction in the Bitcoin blockchain to mint runes.
We should explain what runes are, but before we do, I just have a comment on this. So I used to be of the camp, and I still sort of am. I used to sort of think the halving was a bit weird to celebrate. And by the way, do you know, sometimes we say halving, sometimes we say halvening, and I just like can't help it.
There's no consensus.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I've asked so many people what it is, and they all give me different answers.
Oh, so both are acceptable? So you can say having, and you can say having?
Both are acceptable.
Okay. So we'll use them interchangeably then to you know, be the...
Really throw off the listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I used to be of the camp that, it's kind of weird to celebrate. Like, I get that word celebrating algorithmic is kind
the
of
monetary strength of BTC.
Monetary strength. But, like, there was, at least it used to be, especially... Like last halving, no one would acknowledge that this is actually cutting your security budget, Bitcoin security budget in half as well. So it's kind of like you're celebrating this algorithmic issuance policy, but like you're also celebrating, well, the economic security of our blocks is now like half, right? And I was very worried about this and didn't think that the Bitcoin community was giving this enough attention or time, because if you cut your block subsidy, you have to make up for it in block fees in order to have the same security budget. And it's interesting, David, that is what's happening, only more so. Like, because there is now building on Bitcoin, I'm actually, if this is sustained, of course, I'm much less worried about the block subsidy dropping down. I think a big question, though, is, how sustainable is this? Runes, right. Bitcoin layer twos, will that be a sustainable source for L2 fees going forward?
Yeah, that's totally right. The main difference between the Ethereum security budget design with EIP-1559 is that Ethereum tries to ensure its sustainability internally with its own internal mechanisms, like fee capture via 1559. Whereas what we're seeing here with ordinals and runes starting to become a very dominant part of the Bitcoin security budget, those are things that are actually external to the protocol.
Well, but
those
also, things happening in Bitcoin's Ethereum's going to issue block subsidies potentially as long as it needs to.
Because it knows that it can't demand on external influences to protect itself.
Yes.
Ethereum wants to always ensure to the very end that it will have the assurances that it will be secure.
Which always seemed to me a more like conservative approach to this. But anyway, we should probably explain just a recap of what runes are, David. What are they and why are they causing this spike in Bitcoin block fees?
Runes are a new introduction to Bitcoin, the Bitcoin app layer, the Bitcoin layer one. They are fungible tokens on Bitcoin. So we probably all know what ordinals are. They use Bitcoin block space to etch or inscribe JPEGs into Bitcoin block space, and that is an ordinal. Runes do a similar thing, but it produces fungible tokens inside of the Bitcoin layer one. So they are native to the Bitcoin layer one fungible tokens that you can trade and send a la like ERC-20 tokens on Ethereum, but with like a lot less functionality. Like, no, there's no smart contract inside of Bitcoin for any of these tokens. They're just tokens, which is why when I did the transition into the segment, I called them meme coins, because they're kind of constrained to becoming meme coins. If you want to invoke some sort of like meaning into them, it has to come from outside the protocol, because you can't put logic into runes.
But as the creator said, meme coins, that's perfect product market fit, right? So like let 1,000 meme coins bloom. And that's really what we're seeing. This is a dashboard, by the way. This is on a centralized exchange, OKX. Mm-hmm. a dashboard of
runes. It is pretty cool to see Bitcoin tokens actually trading on centralized exchanges.
Yeah,
that's a new thing.
There were some of the Ordinals tokens maybe doing that. I wasn't paying attention to that, but now like Ordinals, runes
tokens.
NFTs.
Yeah, so Magic Eden has been like very...
That. There were BRC20s, right? In Ordinals.
Yeah, but those are Ordinals. Those are Ordinals.
Okay,
so BRC20s are Ordinals. So the BRC20s were like trying to layer on fungible tokens on top of an Ordinal,
and they did it kind of worked. Didn't work. It was kludgy.
They worked enough to have speculative memory mania around them.
But not like
they were
this.
Basically like an ERC 1111, 1155. But the Casey was like, somebody just like brute forced fungible tokens. Casey, the creator of runes and ordinals. So he said somebody just brute forced fungibility onto an ordinal. Let's just actually make a brand new protocol. We'll call it runes.
That's now what runes was. How this relates to the halving is he just co-released it. He just co-released the halving, right. Just because why not? You got the maximum attention on Bitcoin. Anyway, these on the OKX, these are the leading coins in the runes ecosystem. One is called ZZZZZZ. Another is called Satoshi.
So in the naming of runes, there is no space.
Yeah.
So instead of a space, they have a little dot. It's like a bullet that counts. Is the space that's why there are bullets here.
Dog go to the moon, of course, all separated by these spaces, as you said.
Yep. Dot dot dot.
Satoshi
Z, Z space Z space V space F E H U space dot.
look at this like straight five Z's in a row, or dog go to the moon. I mean, look at these market caps, man. Like,
dude,
this is 45 thousand Bitcoin.
Market cap, which is $3 billion.
It's about
$3 billion market cap for a Bitcoin rune called ZZZZZ Fehu ZZZZZ.
Wow.
And then the number two market cap is dog go to moon. I love Satoshi Nakamoto Inu, number five. Solid name. $80 million.
Wanko rune. Macro meme gob is
Bitcoin
gob is
runes
gob.
X
honey badger coin. All
right, so like there's no way to like actually do any fundamental analysis on these things, right? It's just like, oh, I like that name.
Oh, this is Eric Wall pissing off ETH maxis and Bitcoin maxis alike, and he is tweeting a picture of one day block space fees, and look at this. Bitcoin takes the lead with $78 million and absolutely dwarfs Ethereum on the one day. Ethereum comes in second place, nothing else is close, with $3.2 million in one day fees. Look at that. The block space is valuable again.
Funnily enough, like I put out a tweet that I was retweeting this thing. I don't really feel aggrieved at all by this. Like, I think it's cool that Bitcoin is generating fees. Like, this means like, hey, at least something is being productive.
That's because you're not an ETH maxi, David.
That's because I'm not an ETH maxi. Oh. I will say it did make me feel a very immense appreciation for EIP 1559, because these $78 million of BTC that people are paying to mint and trade and purchase
runes, miner revenue, baby,
are going straight to miners
who
have expenses and overhead, and eventually they all sell Bitcoins. Miners are bullish Bitcoin. They would love to hold Bitcoins, but in the fullness of time, they are forced sellers of Bitcoin because of the overhead of their operations. They either have to pay for electricity or they have to pay for new chips.
What a payday
eventually
for
that
miners,
Bitcoins
though.
Get sold. A huge payday for miners. Whereas if this was on Ethereum, which it frequently is when there's NFT drops, 1559 burns that. And so it actually gets recycled back into the value of ETH rather than gets sold by miners and turns into like a line item in their P&L.
Yeah. Well, that just makes you a greedy plutocrat, David. That's what I say.
Yep.
This is
many such cases.
Okay. So Bitcoin is now treading this territory of its block space fees are really high. This is a tweet from Hector Lopez. 82% of wallets that hold Bitcoin cannot move right now due to high fees. So if you have trace amounts of Bitcoin inside of a Bitcoin wallet, it's not worth it for you to move your Bitcoin outside of your like self-custody because it's too expensive. But that's what happens when you have high block space fees. It's the same thing that Ethereum has been through and will continue to go through moving forward.
It's even worse for Bitcoin, because I think this just shows how much more small a Bitcoin block is than an Ethereum block. Like, and in data throughput per time, Ethereum just has so much more data per Bitcoin block in comparison to Bitcoin block. And so like it's just a really, when there's any marginal amount of demand for Bitcoin block space, fees just go through the roof.
I was going to ask you this though. So here's a tweet. How sustainable is this? This is from Dan Smith. Bitcoin runes are playing out exactly like the short-lived inscriptions craze we saw on Avalanche and Arbitrum.
I don't know, pretty bearish on the longevity of this. In the meantime, miners stay winning, and you like put some stats about some of the largest collections. The right. question is this a flash in the pan or is this sustainable? If you have any takes on that, very, very hard to guess. It's certainly part of the meme coin mania this time on Bitcoin. And first time tokens have been right. in a like reasonable way on Bitcoin. But the question is, do you think all of this is sustainable?
There's definitely some like Bitcoin exceptionalism that tokens and ordinals, like runes and ordinals, will receive just because they're on Bitcoin. Part of the pitch of a Bitcoin ordinal is that like, well, the Bitcoin blockchain is going to be around forever. And so you can be assured that the data of your ordinal will also be around forever. And it's on like, you know, the one blockchain with all of the Lindy. And so there, yeah, so there's Bitcoin does have like some exceptionalism in it. You can see that in the monetary premium. And so therefore, I think runes and ordinals get some overflow from that. But also at the same time, Bitcoin, the blockchain, is entering in the dangerous world of utility. And if you are trying to invoke utility into your chain, you have to keep on moving. Like you have to add more and more utility. You have to keep on evolving. And so like, what is the evolution path for further utility, further expressiveness for ordinals and runes? The one that I see that's very clear and obvious are Bitcoin layer twos, because of what ordinals and runes are, which are like native to the Bitcoin layer one. All of the data for a rune or an ordinal is on the Bitcoin layer one. They are fully interoperable with Bitcoin layer twos, which are far more expressive than the Bitcoin layer one. And so maybe that is the path where the Bitcoin blockchain does grow and evolve in its utility. And so maybe that is the future path.
Well, I mean,
at the same time, like ordinals and runes are like strictly an inferior technology to a smart contracting system.
Yeah, I think Casey called it, you know, the Stone Age, right? Is in terms right. of what you're dealing with. Casey, the mm-hmm. creator of this. It's also difficult to imagine. I mean, $78 million worth of fees. That's what like people right. are paying for. Like, how do you sustain that?
In day number one, which is quite literally a flash in the
pan. For sure, for sure. This is a take here. Honestly, I can't help but be disgusted by some of the behavior I see in the Ordinals and Runes ecosystem. There's influencers, Ord influencers. They're grifting and stealing from you as blatantly as I've ever seen. And it'll be egregious with runes. And he goes on to explain Bitcoin block times are 10 minutes long. And he like goes on basically. I think there are many.
He basically is saying the MEV opportunities, the arbitrage and sniping opportunities in Bitcoin runes and ordinals ecosystem is massive, and people are taking advantage of that. And so this is what happens when you see like $78 million of daily fees. Like where's that coming from? It's actually coming from MEV.
Yeah. Casey said that there wouldn't be as much. He didn't anticipate as much MEV in runes. I mean, yeah, how can there not be, right?
Yeah, if there are fees on your blockchain, there is MEV.
Okay, so Bitcoin Blockspace has a new set of buyers, meme coin buyers. Mm-hmm. And Bitcoin the asset, of course, this has been something we've talked about since early in the year, has a new set of buyers, which is the institutions. Let's go check in on the Bitcoin ETF this week. Inflows versus outflows. Things are starting to slow down in Bitcoin mm-hmm. ETF world. What are we looking at?
Yeah, we're just seeing a tapering of both the inflows and the outflows. So outflows are lessening, inflows are lessening. And so we are staying at an equilibrium, which again, like I said last week, and I think the week before it, and I think the week before that, which is why prices haven't moved. We're probably going to stay flat for a while until we probably see some BTC inflows, because that is ultimately the thing that's wagging the entire market right now. Two investment advisors, however, have allocated over 5% of their portfolio into a Bitcoin ETF. There is some Kansas advisor who put $20 million into Fidelity. That's 6% of a investment advisor's portfolio. And then also some investment advisor in Minnesota put 17%. That's 5% of their portfolio. So you can see, you're starting to see some like further marginal buyers of extremely boomer investment advisors starting to put BTC into their portfolio. I know I say the word boomer a lot, and I'm sorry if that offends any actual boomer listeners, but these are actually Eric Balichunas's words. He calls them, he says, like, here's a homepage of the Kansas advisor that just plowed $20 million into the Fidelity BTC ETF. Literally, this is as boomer as it gets. And if you look at the picture, like, yeah, come on. They're all suit and tie.
Yeah, it's definitely what I think crypto adoption looks like with RIAs, mm-hmm. right? Which is like these registered investment advisors in the US kind mm-hmm. of like just starting to buy a portion of funds mm-hmm. and exposing their clientele to it.
That
you are no longer early if you are buying Bitcoin. These people are buying Bitcoin now.
I think early is kind of a spectrum. It depends. I mean, they're still early for registered investment advisors. And so there's still some alpha there. It's just like you're not early like,
right,
you know, many listeners were many years ago on Bitcoin, but it's still super early for registered investment advisors. David, let's check in on the Grayscale ETF as well. So that, if I recall, was like bleeding to the other ETFs. You know, Fidelity was taking share from them. Yep. So it was
all of the outflows.
It's because they had the most expensive ETF out there. It was like,
They had the most expensive ETF, but they also had all the buyers. So it was the most crowded like asset in history in crypto.
Are you saying because it used to be a trust and then it transferred to the ETF, so it was already really big?
Exactly. All the new ETFs were all net new buyers, whereas the GPTC is like had buyers from like eons ago.
Well, and their fee doesn't help. 150 basis points, 1.5% fee on this ETF. Yeah. That's a lot of money. But they've rolled out something to help mitigate that. What do they got?
And they're rolling out a mini Bitcoin ETF, which is exactly the same thing. I think it's just like another second ETF out of Grayscale, except this one, instead of having the 1.5% fee, has a 0.15% fee. I believe that's 15 bips. This is the lowest, either the lowest or tied for the lowest of all the fees out of the Bitcoin ETFs. And what's important to note here is like, you can actually, if you are a GBTC holder, one of the reasons why you might not want to sell your GBTC and go into a different ETF is that triggers a taxable event. And you might have been buying GBTC when it was like, you know, 80% lower, like a significant taxable event for you. Like you might be up very, very significantly and you don't want that taxable event. So you're just taking the fees to the face because you don't want to pay the taxes. So you can actually roll over your GBTC into this brand new Grayscale mini Bitcoin ETF. And that is not a taxable event. Some sort of fancy shenanigans going on there to make that true. And so you can get, instead of, you can hold your BTC with Grayscale, continue that, and not pay the 1.5% fee, pay the 1.5% fee. And so I think the growth of this mini BTC ETF that they call it, you'll actually start to see the bifurcation of people who are selling GBTC to get out of the very high fees versus people that are actually just selling just to get out of BTC as a whole because they made that speculative bet of I'll buy GBTC at a significant discount and sell during the once the ETF is approved. Yeah. You can see those two populations emerge.
This is just a way for Grayscale to kind of salvage its business. It's sort of a lifeboat, right? Because, you know, the 1.5% fees are just not sustainable. And, you know, this 15 bips, I know you're a big fan of bips, this 15 bips mini ETF alternative is just like, it's actually cheaper in terms of fees than almost all of the other ETFs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way for them to salvage this, which totally makes sense. I think it should be neutral though. I mean, it's not like, I don't think it's going to do anything.
It's not going to attract any more marginal buyer.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a, you know, good for Grayscale type thing.
But it could prevent marginal sellers. So that is bullish.
You know, I was thinking about the RIA investor class who is now sort of like getting up to speed on Bitcoin.
Yeah?
I was thinking about that. I think about them a lot, David. Yeah, they're in my thoughts often. Thoughts and prayers. Mostly prayers. But here's one unsung story. So they're starting to understand Bitcoin. Oh, there's this digital asset. It's like gold, right? Here's a story that they're going to understand. Give them like 5 years, maybe. Hopefully it's sooner, but 5 years. Okay?
Hold your breath, Bankless Nation.
That is, crypto now has this cycle. We have productive capital assets. Okay. If that doesn't mean anything to you,
I've heard this before.
It does to the RIAs, all right? Because they like productive assets. They buy things like stocks with dividends, and we have those now. This is interesting from Token Terminal, who, by the way, I think they're doing fantastic work over there at like showing you what a crypto native P&L looks like, right? Mm-hmm. And so if Ethereum, these are two protocols. If Ethereum and Maker were to issue their earnings report, right? Like imagine they did this. Of course, this is completely on chain. There's no centralized group that kind of issues this. So you can find all this data on chain. If they were to do that, then Ethereum earnings would be $370 million on the Q1 quarter. That's big. That's over like well north of a billion in terms of like annual profits. Which is exceptional. This is Maker, which is, of course, a longstanding DeFi protocol, blue chip, $30 million on the quarter. Like, really impressive if you look at these assets from just a productivity element as well. Anyway, this is a story that I think for crypto natives, there's still time to front run. I will tell you though, I don't get optimistic.
Yeah, keep on front running the crypto industry. It's like deciding that like fundamentals and revenue is actually bullish.
This is what
I've been waiting for that for like 5 years.
This is what I think of when I think of fundamentals and crypto. And so maybe
now fundamentals in crypto is which crypto Twitter influencer is talking about your meme.
Maybe
coin.
I'm just praying the RIAs get it.
Please come and push out the meme coins in this industry. God damn it.
Make fundamentals matter again.
Make fundamentals
matter
again.
Yes, they never did. All right. What do we got coming up?
Coming up next, CZ might spend 3 whole years in prison. Is this fair? What are people's reactions to this and why? And then also, more crypto privacy devs are arrested. Who's next? Is it you? Is it me? Is it your local podcaster?
I hope not.
But first, before we get there, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred crypto exchange in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the links in the show notes, getting started with Kraken today. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be. Secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit Arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities. Launching a token? Worried about the IRS? Talk to Toku for 5 minutes to learn how to save hundreds of thousands of dollars for you, your team, and your investors. Now, if you do an initial consultation, Toku will cover the cost of your token valuation, which is what you need for your launch. So don't wait, reach out to the team right now at team@toku.com. That's team@toku.com.
All right, here it is. CZ is looking at 3 years in jail, David. Here's a tweet. The US recommends a 36-month prison sentence for billionaire Binance CEO CZ, and the scheduling is sentenced for the end of this month, so a few days from now, April 30th. A few of the highlights from the prosecution, what they're saying. A custodial sentence of 36 months, which is twice the high end of the guidelines range, would reflect the seriousness of the offense. This is the prosecution speaking. Promote reasonable respect for the law, afford adequate deterrence, and be sufficient, but not greater than necessary, to achieve the goals of this sentencing. That's what they're saying. Of course, the major misconduct that CZ has already pled guilty for is that he failed to implement an effective AML program, that's anti-money laundering program at Binance, and he allowed illicit actors to use the Binance exchange like to do illicit things. That's the summary here, and the prosecution is asking for 3 years in jail. I gotta tell you, David, jail time actually surprised me. I don't know why I was surprised, but the fact that CZ could go to jail for this for like years was actually surprising to me.
I kind of thought that all of this was going to be negotiated ahead of time by CZ and his team. That's definitely what Arthur Hayes did when he had to settle with the DOJ. Was it the DOJ? Over the BitMEX case, is like he said, like, hey, I'm not coming in to negotiate. I'm not coming in to talk to you guys until like we agree on some certain terms. And those terms were like ended up being like house arrest. CZ's defense team says that no defendant in a remotely similar Bank Secrecy Act case has ever been sentenced to incarceration. And a quote, although probation references a conversation in which Binance's chief compliance officer warned Mr. CZ that there were users from sanctioned countries on Binance.com, the reality is that Binance, a non-US company, was not prohibited from having users from US sanctioned countries on its platform. So some back and forth between CZ's defense team saying, hey, this is 36 months in jail is too much. I'm guessing, I kind of always thought that this was already negotiated ahead of time. We'll see. I bet you it's something closer to Arthur Hayes than actual jail.
You think so?
I think so.
I mean, who knows? Yeah. This is up to the judge, right? This is right. up to the court system. And Arthur Hayes, as you said, he got 6 months on house arrest, basically.
Yeah, in his mansion.
Didn't spend any time actually in jail. I think there's an interesting contrast with, there's been a lot of banks over the past decade, David, uh-huh. that have been charged massive fines, billions of dollars in fines for breaking AML laws as well. And I've never heard of bankers going to jail. Mm-hmm. So there's the case where maybe you can kind of like pre-negotiated this, or it could be that the US prosecutors and maybe the judge and the courts are really trying to make an example of CZ. That's kind of what they were saying in their statement, like would reflect the seriousness of the offense, promote respect for the law and afford adequate deterrence. That to me just says like we want to make an example mm-hmm. of CZ. So I don't know. Maybe the political climate has changed, or maybe there's something about this where they're really going to like go for the jugular here.
Yeah, CZ actually wrote a letter to the court where he said he apologized for his poor decisions and accepted full responsibility for his actions. In a letter to the judge, there is no excuse for my failure to establish the necessary compliance controls at Binance. I originally became interested in cryptocurrency because of the inclusiveness and equal opportunity it provides everyone to the world. Looking forward, I see many opportunities in biotech as well. Specifically, I feel too much of the current medical research is too profit-driven. Words cannot explain how deeply I regret my choices that result in me being before the court. Rest assured that it would never happen again, is what CZ says to the court. So kind of saying, hey, I had a bad guy past, but I'm going to be a good guy in the future, I promise.
Yeah, this is pleading to the judge, basically. Yeah. He said, I also apologize to everyone I've let down, my family, my friends, Binance employees, and the larger crypto community, mm-hmm. right? This is a very contrite letter, basically saying, I don't want to go to jail. I'm sorry. I've learned my lesson. And he talks at the end about another area I will continue to spend my time is helping youth, which was a priority for me. So he's trying to paint the picture to the judge.
Good guy arc.
That he's going in full good guy arc. Uh-huh. It's interesting. He has a sister, I believe, that works at JP Morgan, who spoke on his behalf as well and is kind of like writing letters to the judge. His kids are in the U.S. They go to like U.S. colleges, and they have also spoken out. And so like CZ is really trying to gather a lot of support. There's letters of support from a U.S. ambassador to China, professors at university, Columbia University, Morgan Stanley managing directors. It's really a whole campaign to kind of show that CZ's on a good guy arc and has learned his lesson. He just doesn't want to go to jail, man. I get it.
Not just those of all the people you mentioned, the 161 total letters of support. So there was a very like a coordinated effort to like, hey, can you please write a letter to the court saying don't put CZ in jail?
What do you think about this? What do you think about this? So 36 months in prison. Should he get prison time? I asked the crypto community this question, but before they speak, I want to hear what you say.
I've said this before many times on the weekly roll-up. I do think that CZ has some like pretty crazy skeletons in the closet. I don't think they're related to anything about this. Like the bank secrecy stuff and financial surveillance things, which is what he's being charged for and what he's going to jail for, I care less about. The things that like I know that CZ has done that are wrong are probably more in the familiar camp for what people are known in the crypto Twitter space, which is like backdoor dealings about pumping tokens and, unsavory relationships with Justin Sun and things like this that are kind of actually back in the rearview mirror of 2017 to 2020. I think CZ realized that he was becoming at the head of a very large empire, and he knew that he would have to eventually like kind of button up and manage risk, which is slowly the arc that CZ has been on this entire time. 36 months in jail for like what is, very much like, very illegal things kind of seems like a good deal. Like the guy's going to come out after 3 years at most, if that's what the sentence is, like a giga billionaire, and he's going to be just fine.
3 years, so, man. Like, that That sucks, though. So the question of the crypto community, should he get prison time? No prison time, 82%. Yes, prison time, 17%.
Well, yeah, that's because it's like CZ, in according to crypto Twitter, is like a god. So everyone,
well, SBF stole people in crypto's money. CZ did not do that.
Right. And I CZ think, didn't lose anyone's money.
I think there's just a number of crypto people, myself included, who think that AML KYC laws are like broken anyway. And yeah. So... probably treat that with less severity than maybe some will, but it's all up to the court system now. So we'll have to see. David, speaking of AML KYC, all right, this was huge this week. The Samurai Wallet founders were arrested on Wednesday morning. So that happened just a couple of days ago. One of them is extradited from Portugal. They could face up to 25 years in prison.
So the Samurai Wallet, this is a Bitcoin wallet and it has a coin join feature. Coin join is like pretty old technology in the Bitcoin world. It's basically a mixing service. So all of the Bitcoin UTXOs, which is what a Bitcoin is, all goes into this coin join thing. They get mixed up and then you get sent back a new UTXO, which is your new Bitcoin, same amount. But now you have some amount of privacy with where that UTXO came from. And so like I said, this technology has been around. This is not the only time this coin join technology has been used. The problem with coin join is that it requires a centralized server to do some coordination about which UTXO, is selected for input into like coin join like cycle. And so this is what the Samurai founders were actually like operating and maintaining. You can actually go to the samuraiwallet.com website and you'll notice that it is seized by the FBI.
This is what it looks like right now. This website has been seized. It's a big FBI notice. There's like the Silk Road type notices that you may have seen previously.
Yeah. So the Samurai Wallet coin join functionality is actually dead. It is actually a downed service. Unlike Tornado Cash, for example, which, I mean, the devs are also having their court case, but Tornado Cash as autonomous code on Ethereum is still operating, unlike this one. There's also some other differences here. The accusation of these two developers is that they actually kind of targeted gray and black market activities intentionally. They made more than $100 million in profits from fees from money laundering from legal dark web markets. They facilitated around $2 billion in unlawful transactions between 2015 and now. And then there's also some like pretty bad facts is what a lawyer would call them, which is like Samurai founders' messages to their investors talking about their intent to solicit activity from gray and dark markets and kind of boasted and invited illegal activity. So as a lawyer, probably some bad facts. We'll have to see, you know, everyone gets their day in court, but materially different from the Tornado Cash case, which there is no such evidence that either of the developers facilitated or aided in any sort of nefarious activity. Obviously, nefarious activity did use Tornado Cash, but that wasn't any sort of result of the actions of the founders of Tornado Cash. And also Tornado Cash was like a totally autonomous. And so like while we don't enjoy privacy devs or devs who write code to be arrested, the precedent for this, I don't think is as meaningful as it is with a Tornado Cash case.
Yeah, I guess like, you know, that subtlety is definitely a difference. And I think it makes the Tornado Cash case, which is like two devs got arrested, charged with anti-money
just
laundering stuff.
Publishing code, yeah.
Yeah, makes it more defensible. But like, I think there goes to the basic question of like, should US citizens have the right to private transactions of their cryptocurrency? Right. And like all of those subtleties, that'll get worked out in kind of like courts in terms of what's permissible and what's not. But I think the Samurai Wallet devs were basically, they took kind of like the Silk Road vantage point. And they basically like everybody should have access to privacy. And if we have to run centralized servers for that, then so be it. Right. Like, right. I don't know that the DOJ right now is making the distinction that you're making of like these guys were writing private code. These guys are, you know, like writing immutable smart contracts on Ethereum because they're both arrested right now. Like both groups are arrested right now.
Go straight to jail.
Go straight to jail. And I think that's like the biggest concern about this. Like it really feels like the US is putting its foot down and saying we don't want the world, US citizens or anybody to have the ability to transact privately. And they've enjoyed these benefits in the banking system to date, right? They have like the Eye of Sauron. They can see all the transactions that are going on at any one time. And I think that the concern here for crypto is whether it's a Tornado Cash or whether it's Samurai is where does this stop, right? Like we're talking about 25 years for writing code that helps people keep their transactions private. Yes, bad guys can use Tornado Cash code, but like it's, you know, it's required if you want private transactions. There's no other way to do it in crypto right now. So here's another thing, David. They treat the banking system with kid gloves, right? Over the last 10 years, there have been like dozens of cases of AML breaches of some of the largest banks in the world, HSBC, just like others. And the UN estimates there's $2 trillion in money laundering by big banks each year. And I never see any of the bankers go to jail. They're never just like arrested from their homes and like they have facing 25 years of prison time, which makes me feel very much like crypto's being targeted in this case. Mm-hmm. And so Tornado Cash developers, privacy developers, we have Samurai Wallet developers. Like, what about Aztec? That is a layer two. There's a private layer two. What about Zcash? This is an entire blockchain that keeps all transactions shielded and private. Are they going to come after them next? We don't really know, because this is not like laws on the books through a, you know, congressional act of any sort. This is like regulators and the DOJ coming after these people. And so like where does it end is kind of the question. And I think what their objective is to push out a lot of fear in the industry to get people to stop using these tools and to get people to stop developing them. And actually, here's the concerning thing. I think it's working, right? Like If you're a dev working on something related to privacy in crypto, like you're going to stop working on that thing unless you want to face the possibility of prison.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Just the incentive of the state is always to capture the next most marginal illegal person doing the next most marginal illegal activity. So at some point, the court has to stop them. Hopefully that's the Tornado Cash case. Speaking of the courts deciding things, and this is actually some breaking news that we had to pause the recording right now just to actually inject into this weekly roll-up. Consensus, the Ethereum software studio, is actually suing the SEC. So this is coming out right now.
Wow.
Yeah. So apparently the SEC gave Consensus a Wells notice, and then the Consensus was like, okay, great, we're going to sue you guys. And so they are preemptively suing the SEC over a number of different things. I think the main SEC lawsuit against Consensus is that its popular MetaMask wallet, everyone knows MetaMask, is a broker-dealer because it probably has that swap feature in it. And so Consensus is...
Oh my God, it's the same thing as Uniswap, right? They're like...
Same thing as Uniswap.
Uniswap's a broker-dealer, so MetaMask must be a broker-dealer too. Every wallet.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yep. Yeah. And like MetaMask is just like, it has that like transaction swap feature, and it uses on-chain DEXs and DEX aggregators to fill those orders. So this is the precedent that's going to be decided around that. But Consensus is saying, hey, we're not going to wait for you guys to sue us. We're just going to sue you preemptively to get clarity ahead of time. And also, Ryan, they're also going for ETH as a security. This is the new thing.
Wait, what? Who
they
is?
They are trying to get a court to get the SEC
to
state.
Consensus is. Okay. I thought you meant the SEC was trying, like suing Consensus. No. Okay.
Yeah, Consensus is going after the SEC, leveraging the court, saying, hey, court, get the SEC to say that ETH isn't a security. So this is in the Consensus complaint against the SEC, as well as an injunction to the SEC to leave ETH devs alone. I don't know what that means, but apparently that's in there as
alone.
Well. leave them alone.
That's great. All right, so we're being a bit more aggressive and proactive, right? Not waiting for lawsuits to come to us, taking them to court.
No one's scared of the SEC. Everyone's scared of the DOJ. No one's scared of the SEC. SEC's a joke.
Yeah, FinCEN is kind of scary these days for sure in the financial surveillance stuff. Yeah. All right, what do we got coming up?
Coming up next, an LRT token depegs and causes liquidations. Rutro. The super chain gets a little bit more real, and the IRS wants you to pretend that your Ledger wallet is a broker dealer. So joining forces with the SEC. Well, let's go hear about all this stuff and more. But first, I want to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Mantle. The chain with all of the yield, your METH yield and all the other types of yield in the DeFi ecosystem that's on Mantle. If you have not checked out Mantle, check it out today. There's a link in the show notes to get started with Mantle. Let's go hear from them right now. Mantle, formerly known as BitDAO, is the first DAO-led Web3 ecosystem, all built on top of Mantle's first core product, the Mantle Network, a brand new high-performance Ethereum Layer 2 built using the OP stack, but uses EigenLayer's data availability solution instead of the expensive Ethereum Layer 1. Not only does this reduce Mantle Network's gas fees by 80%, but it also reduces gas fee volatility, providing a more stable foundation for Mantle's applications. The Mantle Treasury is one of the biggest DAO-owned treasuries, which is seeding an ecosystem of projects from all around the Web3 space for Mantle. Mantle already has sub-communities from around Web3 onboarded, like Game7 for Web3 gaming, and Bybit for TVL and liquidity and on-ramps. So if you want to build on the Mantle network, Mantle is offering a grants program that provides milestone-based funding to promising projects that help expand, secure, and decentralize Mantle. If you want to get started working with the first DAO-led Layer 2 ecosystem, check out Mantle at mantle.xyz and follow them on Twitter at 0xmantle. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world, driving real-world use cases like mobile payments and mobile DeFi, and with Opera MiniPay as one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets, Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 300 million transactions and 1.5 million monthly active addresses. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer 2. Optimism, Polygon, Matter Labs, and Arbitrum have all thrown their hats in the ring for the Celo layer 2 to build upon their stacks. Why the competition? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability secured by Ethereum validators, and one-block finality. What does that all mean for you? With Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas natively using ERC20 tokens, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forums, follow Celo on Twitter, and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
Have you heard about Safe? They're not just pioneers in crypto custody, they're also leading the transition to the world of smart accounts. With Safe, managing your crypto has never been smarter or safer. They've recently passed $100 billion in total value secured and are now deployed everywhere with over 15 supported networks. But that's not all. Safe is revolutionizing the game with their full compatibility with ERC-4337, making embedding wallets super easy to integrate into your daily crypto activities. And for the crypto enthusiasts out there, Safe has something special. The Safe Pass Activity Rewards Program is a fantastic way to engage and earn rewards, launching just after SafeDAO voted in favor of Safe Token transferability. So what are you waiting for? Head over to safe.global, sign up for the Safe Pass Activity Rewards Program, and don't forget to check out SafeCon during Berlin Blockchain Week, where the future of smart accounts is unfolding in real life. Click the link in the show notes to secure your spot today and be a part of the transition that's setting a new standard in the world of custody. Welcome to Consensus 2024. Consensus is one of the biggest hubs for all things crypto, blockchain, and Web3. This May, Consensus is celebrating 10 years of decentralizing the future. Going to Consensus means being in good company with over 15,000 attendees from over 100 countries. You have the opportunity to learn directly from the architects and advocates representing Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, along with the teams from popular layer twos like Mantle, Arbitrum, Optimism, Base, and others. But Consensus is more than just discussions and presentations. Badge holders get access to witness 10 professional karate combat fights and one unprofessional one between myself and Nick Carter. For the visionaries, PitchFest is your spotlight, presenting a stage for the most promising early stage Web3 companies. And for the devs, the hackathon offers a unique chance to build your next project or take your existing project to the next level.
Immerse yourself in hundreds of side events and hacker houses scattered around Austin.
Register for Consensus 2024 today and save 20% with code BANKLESS.
A new LRT airdrop this week. Renzo announced its token launch that will actually launch on May 30th is when that token will be live. Second largest LRT after EtherFi with 33.5% market share, $3.5 billion in deposits. So season one campaign ended on April 26th. Season two incentives will start soonly thereafter. This is kind of a new meta. The season one is like people's retroactive airdrop and season two is like, but wait, there's more. Don't leave. So airdrop details again, claiming on the 30th, the total airdrop allocation for both season one and season two is 12%, 7% for season one. And then there was some airdrop eligibility as well. Minimum number of 360 easy points per wallet. As the Renzo org announced their airdrop.
That was the good news side, right?
That was the good news. There was a little bit of a hiccup post. So Renzo did not have withdrawals enabled yet. So if you had easy ETH, which is the Renzo LRT, you can't just unwrap it and get your ETH back. If you wanted your ETH back, you'd have to go to Uniswap and sell it. They will eventually open up withdrawals, but withdrawals was not enabled. Once they announced their token and that the snapshot was happened, all the airdrop farmers were like, oh, well, we're done here. I'm going to leave the protocol. Except since there was no withdrawals, the only way to leave is to sell your easy ETH for ETH on Uniswap, which causes a disequilibrium in price.
Like this, we're looking at on the screen.
And so for bank listeners, we are looking at what is called a DPEG. Yeah. So the price of Easy ETH DPEG'd all the way down to like $680 for what is worth one Ether. Numbskull.
That's like a 70% deep. That's a big DPEG.
Yeah, because some idiot just like market sold all their easy ETH into Uniswap, not accounting for how much liquidity was there, which was not enough to actually account for the outflow demands. There's something like $30 million of liquidity inside of the Uniswap pair. So it depends.
Someone learned a harsh lesson that day.
someone immediately took a 70% haircut, yikes, trying to become an airdrop farmer. That's why I just like hands off, guys.
Hands off. Calm cool. down. Come take Be a breath. Cool. Calm know down. What you're doing.
There is also leveraged airdrop farmers in the DeFi ecosystem who have Easy ETH as collateral or other types of collateral that is related to Easy ETH, specifically inside of Morpho. And so if Morpho and the Morpho vault that uses Easy ETH as collateral, it uses the Uniswap exchange to get liquidity for any sort of liquidation.
Yeah.
And so it uses Uniswap as like, hey, what's going on over there? Is there enough? What's the price of Easy ETH on Uniswap? And when when it gets cut in half by like 70%,
liquidated.
Then all of a sudden Morpho's like, well, we're going to have to liquidate you guys. And so there's a big liquidation in Morpho. Because some trader, some airdrop farmer just hit market sell into Uniswap into like no liquidity. We have discovered that we are on some sort of efficient frontier of risk inside of the leveraged airdrop farming ecosystem. People that were depositing easy ETH into Morpho to borrow more ETH to go like leverage up on point farming. Yikes. And then we also learned that you don't dump into Uniswap. We also learned that LRTs should enable withdrawals before they announce their airdrop. That's the correct order of operations.
Lots of learnings for everybody.
I mean, yeah.
Who would have known that if you stake your ETH, then restake it, and then lever long on it, you could get liquidated, right?
That trade up, baby.
I mean, but people should be aware, LRTs can depeg, sometimes quite significantly.
LRTs can depeg.
And yeah. I mean, as a result, you probably just shouldn't lever up. By the way, this is a chart that's kind of worrying to me a little bit. I don't know if this is a chart for the future. This is the Karak protocol, the new restaking protocol.
Karak is like the Eigen competitor. Yeah, that's like Eigen is just ETH and LSTs. Well, you can restake with Karak with anything.
Okay, but here's the problem. If you look at this pie chart, the stake that's in Karak right now, about 75% of it is Eigenlayer LRTs. Okay, so this is ETH that's been staked, restaked, and then restaked again.
It's not just 70% LRTs. It's 34% LRTs and then 41% derivatives of those LRTs in Pendle.
It's levered LRTs?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so here's the structure going on. So let's start from, I'm going to start the
You
very
really
bottom.
Want to get into this.
Yes. Here's the structure that's being built right now. We have the Beacon Chain. Proof of stake Beacon Chain with these stakers.
We're good.
Solid. Super strong. We have Eigenlayer and the withdrawal contract for Eigenlayer. That's where the slashing
Risky.
Events happen for ABSs.
It's new, but okay.
Well, it's designed to be. It's new. It's designed to be like no one is supposed
some
to
smart
be
contract
slashed
risk, but
unless
got it.
They are really meaningfully like F
yeah.
up. Like you can be an AVS and never have a slashing event unless somebody like materially fucked
Go
up.
On.
Okay. So that's Eigenlayer. Then LRTs deposit Ether or LSTs into Eigenlayer.
Okay.
On top of that, and that's the Eigenlayer LRT ecosystem. Then we can enter the Ethereum DeFi layer, where some people are doing Pendle trades, some people are leveraging up on Morpho, some people are like providing liquidity in Uniswap. That's some of the LRT ecosystem.
Got it.
And that's the conversation that we just had with Renzo and Morpho and all that.
Okay. Super risky.
Now we enter. This is where Karak is built on. This is where Karak starts.
No, not all of because Karak. 75%.
So 75% of Karak starts here, and those assets are deposited into Karak for the Karak points.
You know what? People getting liquidated in these things. Like, I mean, come on. Do not complain. You know what you're doing. You're hunting for some points here.
Oh my God.
All right, David, let's move on to something a bit more stable. Telegram is allowing USDT payments. So 900 million Telegram users out there. Do you know that?
Yeah.
I know we are one of them. And it's just going to work like sending a direct message, except with a stablecoin, except with Tether. So free, cross-border, instant. Pretty impressive. The Telegram is really like doubling, tripling down on crypto these days.
But yeah, finally getting their like crypto like ecosystem that they promised in like 2018. But come back to me when we can do some liquidations on Telegram, because Tether payments not
stablecoins are so boring to you right now.
Let's get some like Telegram restaking stablecoin leverage going on.
This does pull the question of where the next super app is going to live, right? Telegram kind of building on top of crypto to become a payment super app. X, of course, is building a wallet. Right. They're not talking about any crypto plans right now. So far, it seems to be built on the trad banking system so far, and they're trying to turn X into a Venmo type experience. And we also have, this is a rumor just coming to this episode, David, so not completely substantiated. Looks like Stripe is adding crypto payments finally this summer. Look at this. This is a good old-fashioned crypto wallet. And of course, everybody uses Stripe. So I don't know.
It feels like 2022.
I know. We're actually getting some of that adoption that we were hoping for.
Pivoting into the world of this super chain, Optimism is releasing a multi-chain upgrade system. So this is a way for all of the chains in the Optimism super chain to upgrade their chain at once via a single shared upgrade contract. So when this one single contract upgrades and we're upgrading the OP stack, all of the chains in this super chain all upgrade all at once. And so this is just part of the growing scope of the superchain. And then this is, of course, Liam saying native interop between Base, World Chain, Celo, Zora, OP Mainnet, and all the other future superchains. Fractal is also one of those. These will all upgrade in unison, and then will all become universally composable.
That's great. If we can just solve fragmentation across at least the superchain ecosystems, right? That would be like, 80% of the challenge today.
Speaking of more chains, this is a little curveball this week, right?
Yeah.
Shiba Inu has raised $12 million for its new chain by selling an unreleased token, Treat Token, because, you give treats to your dog.
Yeah, yeah.
It could have a privacy-focused layer 3.
Wait, what?
Built on top of the SHIB layer 2. So this is a FHE, fully homomorphic encryption, roll-up that settles down to the Shibarium layer two, which is actually a sidechain, which is its own native validator network. And so they spit out this new token called Treats, which is the native token of the SHIB layer 3. That's going to be a privacy-focused layer 3 that settles down to the SHIB layer 2, which is actually a sidechain.
Wow. Wow. Okay, I think I get it. It's actually a sidechain, so it's not a layer 2. So it's not even. It can't be a layer 3.
Yeah.
But did you say privacy focused? Focused.
Yeah, it's an FHE fully homomorphic encryption rollup.
That is some a privacy layer 3. That's some deep tech.
Let's just introduce privacy into crypto via the meme coins.
Yeah.
The DOJ will never see it coming.
Well, actually, this is a meme coin that's building, maybe, presumably. Yeah. I have to see what they build. But wow, that's how we're going to revolutionize the world, huh?
Revoking their meme coin status, injecting utility. Wow, bold strategy.
Tell me about this, David. So Lido is starting with DVT. I think like DVTs, I understood it as you get to stake with friends, right? So you can kind of like do group staking, can be less than 32 ETH. But remind me about that. And it seems like this is maybe a step towards making Lido more decentralized. What's going on here?
That's exactly right. So DVT, distributed validator technology, basically you and your buddies can create a virtual validator in the cloud of sorts. And so if none of y'all have 32 ETH, but you need the 32 ETH, you guys can band together and have like 2, 3, 4, 5 N number of nodes that all put in ETH into a pot. Once you get over 32 ETH, you can become an Ethereum validator. And only one of you has to sign a message on everyone else's behalf. And the cool thing is, if one of you fails to sign a message, somebody else can take over that role. And so it's not only a decentralization mechanism, but it's also an uptime mechanism as well. Lido originally gave, I think, Obol Network a grant way back in the day to research a DVT before it was actually a piece of software. And so this is actually coming full circle from an initial Lido given grant to research and develop DVT. Now Lido is bearing the fruits of that that grant, so that they can actually use DVT to include 72 net new node operators into the Lido ecosystem.
That's
very big.
Tripling. I guess because have 30 right now, right? So
32. Like yeah. So they're adding 72 onto the previous 32 that already existed.
That's great. All right. So cool. If you don't have 32 ETH, all you need is one ETH and then a very rich friend or a group of friends, right? All that ETH.
Maybe hopefully you're all equally rich.
David, this was annoying, super annoying this week. This is the IRS news. So here's when's the last time you looked at a 1099 tax form? You ever look at these?
No, I pay someone to look at them for me.
All right. Well, so if you have an exchange account with our favorite exchange or Kraken, Kraken's going to send you a 1099 every year, like detailing your trades and the transactions you did. This is a new proposed form from the IRS for digital assets. So it's a 1099 for digital asset proceeds from broker transactions.
And are you making me look at an IRS form?
Yeah.
When I don't have to?
Okay. Well, let me zoom in. Let's enhance. I'm going to zoom this in. Right. So, okay. So a Coinbase or a Kraken or some like exchange has to send you one of these. There's a checkbox, broker type involved in the transaction, a kiosk operator, digital asset payment processor, hosted wallet provider, or what's this? Unhosted wallet providers.
What is a broker
that is an unhosted wallet provider? Okay.
I have a wallet on this computer right now. Is my computer a broker?
The IRS thinks your ledger is a broker, basically. That's the huge concern with this type of a tax form, because what it could mean, David, is that if you are a Uniswap user interface or if you are a MetaMask or something, you have to go find the identities of anyone who has used an unhosted crypto wallet inside of your application, go track down their social security number, their like where they live, all of that, to send them this 1099. That is the nightmare scenario if the IRS considers unhosted crypto wallets essentially a broker. This is what Sheehan
is. Isn't this what Consensus is suing the SEC over? Because like MetaMask, the last thing that MetaMask wants to do
You know, we're fighting the Hydra here, so we like that's the SEC head of the government. This is the IRS head of the government.
We're gonna chop off the SEC head, and then the IRS is like,
the IRS comes in, like, you know, bites our head, and that's what's happening. So this is Sheehan. He is a like crypto tax expert.
Can we take the IRS to court?
I mean, I think we're going to have to take them all to the court, David. He says, I don't think crypto will be pseudonymous or privacy preserving anymore.
Get your shit figured out.
At least in the US. Yesterday, the IRS issued this, the form that we were just talking about, and brokers will be required to generate this form for the sale of transactions. Okay. We're not sure exactly whether the IRS like did this accidentally, whether they don't know what they're doing or what, but like we'd already given comments on this. This is months ago. The problem is the form captures data points, is date acquired, date sold, date proceeds. It would also create a massive IRS database of every single person's crypto wallet and like who owns it. I mean, like, what a honeypot. This is
sick.
Anyway, we've talked too much about the different heads of the Hydra in this episode. I'm just kind of exhausted by it, but that's another thing for you to think about. I know you spent a lot of time thinking about your 1099 forms, so.
Totally. Yeah. What's that line? Like, you don't attribute something
malice,
to like malice in it, which could be contributed to or attributed to, what's it like being a mistake?
Incompetence, stupidity, something like this. Yeah.
In this case, I think for the government, when it's about the government in relation to crypto, it's got to be inverted. It's not incompetence, it's actually malice.
I think it could be both. A little bit of both. The good news, says Jake Travinsky, is these rules make literally no sense at all. And the great news
is that good news?
Yeah. Well, he says the great news is we really like filing lawsuits. So if you're a crypto lawyer, you're about to be real busy. I mean, you already have been.
Get about to get more busy.
Yeah. This can only be explained by wanting to discredit and destroy crypto. It's another crypto take.
Right. Right. Thanks, Gabe.
It's like
thanks,
all Gabe. the Hydra heads are kind of working together at this point. It feels very coordinated.
Yeah, it's all happening at once.
David, some raises to mention on the week. There's two that Bankless Ventures is involved in. The first one is Movement. What is this?
Yeah, Movement is so simple. A Move EVM layer 2 on Ethereum. So Move the language. This is the thing, the coding language developed actually by Facebook. And that was the focus of the Libra DM project. Developers speak very highly of Move for some reason. I don't know why, because I'm not a dev, but everyone loves Move. It's object-oriented, which I think is like what are tokens and NFTs other than objects? So I think there's a connection there.
Yeah.
But different, the point is different virtual machines that are extremely performant as layer twos on Ethereum. And so a Move-based layer two, that is bytecode equivalent with the EVM. So you get both the benefits of Move and the ecosystem of the EVM. They say, Ryan, 30,000 transactions per second with bytecode compatibility of the EVM.
30,000.
How many do you think of those are votes? How many of those are vote transactions?
Oh, wow. David, you couldn't resist, huh?
The answer to that is zero bankless sanction because movement is not a layer one, so it doesn't need consensus, and it's not Solana delegated proof of stake, so it doesn't need votes.
Wow, you had to
explain the joke.
Authentic as well. They raised $4 million their seed round. This Bankless Ventures was involved. This is almost like a RAS, like a infrastructure layer roll up as a service. Right. You've heard that for the roll up ecosystem. This is that for Eigen apps. This kind of infrastructure. Yeah. What this means is more Eigen apps. I think faster because we have the infrastructure. You just like kind of print it out. More yield, hopefully, if you're a restaker, although like don't go and re-leverage your your restake. We just talked about that. And something as well called stateless rollups. What is a stateless rollup, David, that's possible on Authentic?
Yeah, so a stateless rollup. So a rollup is a blockchain, right? And so blockchain has trustless state. That's my Twitter name. A stateless rollup is basically just like take the state out of a rollup and then what are you left with? You're left with compute. So you get stateless compute. So like these are compute networks which can compute certain things, literally anything. And that can be kind of a module inside of the rollup ecosystem or any sort of like thing in the valence of Ethereum can leverage the stateless compute of these specific ABSs. This is like a perfect Bankless Ventures deal because we like scaling things. We love restaking and we need more AVSs. And so this, I think there's actually going to be more AVSs than there are rollups. I think there's more AVSs than rollups in the long
tail.
Well,
some rollups can be AVSs, yes? You just economically.
Sure, I think AVSs actually encompass a larger Venn diagram. The rollup Venn diagram fits inside of the AVS Venn diagram. And the Eigenlayer ecosystem is like really hitting the gas right now. Mm. And so, but like what is needed the most is more AVSs.
Yeah, apps, and actual apps that people use.
Actual Eigen apps. Yeah, I think we're the only ones that call them Eigen apps, but more people should. And so Authentic just helps Eigenlayer AVSs spawn and structure themselves and build themselves.
Well, guys, that has been the roll-up. The last thing I want to talk to you about, David, is your big fight that's coming up, okay? I just want an update because I was looking at this on the week. This is the Poly Markets. People are gambling. Crypto likes to speculate.
Nick's coming. He's biting at my heels.
If you haven't heard.
The margins have compressed.
Is it May 30th? Is that the date? You're fighting Nick Carter, okay?
Me and Nick Carter are fighting karate combat.
These podcast titans.
It's basically kickboxing.
All right. You are winning so far in terms of the betting markets. Okay.
Always have been.
50% on David Hoffman. That's gone down, though. I don't know if you're happy about that.
Started at 60%.
Yeah. And then Nick has 43%. There's like a lot of money on the line. I mean, it's growing over
there's,
here.
There's like $63,500 people betting between me and Nick Carter.
And I'm just enjoying seeing Nick taunting you and like you clapping back on all the social media that I follow. This is Nick thinking about David
Hoffman.
We have
pretty good banter. Yeah. Do you see my most recent tweet about this?
I don't think so. I don't know. What'd you say?
So there's this Telegram group of all the fighters in the card. So there's six fights going on. We're actually the headliners because
really,
of course.
Who else is fighting? Anyone I would know?
Billy McFarlane from the Fire Festival guy.
No way.
I saw that
documentary. Yeah. Who's he fighting?
I don't know.
Some crypto dude.
I don't know, dude. So he's in the card, but yeah, we're the headliners. There's this like group of us and they're like, hey, you guys have to go get like a medical exam, blah, blah, all this kind of stuff, like logistics. And Nick just drops a question in there. It's like, will there be drug testing? Cause I don't see anything about drug testing in this, I'm like, dude, bro, you can't just have
is
that.
Is he roiding up to come beat you? Is that what he's doing? Do you think he's got
that
some
was what, so I tweeted a screenshot of him asking that being the implication. I don't think Nick would take
no
words.
He would
it
never
seems, it seems not
so
characteristic
fiat.
Of him
so fiat of him
it's very fiat of him yeah it would be very fiat of him Well, anyone, if anyone knows any roid stealer, hit me up.
Oh my god. Are you how's training going for this? Like, are you gonna be ready? How you feeling?
Oh, I'm not training.
How you feeling, champ?
I'm pulling an Ansem.
No, what? By the way, I so you're not the only crypto. Can I call you crypto influencer, David? That's what other people say.
Okay, but if you do, I get to go on a quick soapbox about that.
All right, then I won't say it. Okay. We got to end this episode. I did watch the Ansem fight, though. Okay, so this is Ansem versus I don't know who.
Barney.
Okay, I don't know. Ansem, unlike you, is definitely a crypto influencer. We're not sure about David, but is definitely one. And I watched three rounds of this. I'm not a big boxing guy.
You watched 3.5 rounds.
I can't really assess what I watched. Mm-hmm. Ansem did lose, I will say that. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on this fight, anything that you've learned, anything that you're going to do differently, any different kind of energy you're going to bring to the Nick Carter fight.
This is actually a message to Nick. I'm going to perfectly bring the Ansem energy into the fight. I'm just not going to train. I'm gonna wing it.
Oh wow!
I believe in myself. Yeah, I believe in myself. I'm just gonna eat myself into this without training. Yeah.
Wow, I was not giving a lot of faith to one side of that prediction market here, David. But I'm rooting for you, and we'll be following your training with great interest, and certainly updates on the roll up from time to time. Let's end with this. Crypto is risky. So is karate, boxing, and whatever you, Nick, are getting up to. You could lose what you put in. But we are headed west. This is a frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.